So Mike Tomlin, in his Wednesday presser, first one back after the bye week, spent like 10 to 12 minutes just talking about Washington in his opening remarks and talked about, you know, how they've turned their season around and how this is going to be a true test. And then he got into, you know, segments of the team, and I wanted to let you hear him. I mean, I love listening to Mike Tomlin talk to begin with, but letting you hear him talk about the offense and about the quarterback in particular.
Really impressed with first and foremost what they're doing offensively on their young signal caller. Quarterback mobility is an asset to him, but I've been really impressed by his prudent use of it. Not only him, but you got to acknowledge Coach Kingsbury as the architect of it. Their ability to prudently utilize his mobility, particularly in weighty moments, to keep the defense off balance, to win lines to gain, to score points. It shows up in a lot of situational statistics or circumstances. They got 15 rushing touchdowns. They lead the NFL in rushing touchdowns. His quarterback mobility is a component of that. They're 11 of 11 on the season on fourth down conversions. You watch that reel. His mobility, whether by design or ad lib, is a component of that. It doesn't matter what tape you put on, third down, red zone operation. His mobility is a major factor, whether it's by design or by ad lib, play extension, escape. It is something to be reckoned with. It's one of the core components of why they're a dangerous group. You couple that with their unique ball security. They've turned the ball over three times in nine games. I think that's a record of some description through nine games in the NFL. They've thrown two interceptions, and they fumbled one time. You lead the league in rushing touchdowns. You're running the ball as effectively as a collective as they are, and you've only turned it over three times in nine games. Man, you're going to be 7-2.
Mike Tomlin. There's something about listening to him, and I watched it was like a 45-minute press conference with all the questions. He's a communicator, man. There is no doubt about it. Mike Tomlin can communicate. All right, let's get to my keys to a win Sunday over the Steelers. All right, Washington beats Pittsburgh on Sunday if. Washington's favored in this game. I'm not surprised by that, actually, with the way they've played. Even though the Steelers have played very well, Jerry Dulac, our last guest, mentioned, you know, they're averaging over 30 points per game in their last three games, and they've had two 400-yard-plus offensive days in their last two for the first time since 2018. You know, you think about the Steelers post-Ben Roethlisberger, and you think about this team that just can't score, that can't move the football, but has been incredibly well-coached and has had great defense. And that's why they continue to, you know, their string of winning seasons, and they make postseason games. But when they've gotten to the postseason, it's like they can't score. So you know they're not going to win in the postseason. But this team, with Russell Wilson in particular, is moving the football. They've got better players. They've got a legit top-tier wide receiver. They've got a quarterback that looks completely different confidence-wise than he did last year in Denver. Our last guest told us you totally attribute that to Arthur Smith. It's the right kind of scheme for him. He's got, you know, a big-time target. He's got a running game. He doesn't have to do it all. I think it's a different Pittsburgh team. You know, before the season started, if I were to have assumed Washington was going to be much better than people thought and, you know, the offense was going to be okay, I'd look at this game as, you know, they can beat Pittsburgh at home. The Steelers, they can never score. They can never move the football. They're different. They have been here recently anyway. And, yeah, the two opponents in which they've, you know, rolled up 400-plus yards, the Jets and the Giants. All right, number one, I think, key to beating Pittsburgh is to not become one-dimensional offensively. I know that they were one-dimensional offensively in Baltimore against the Ravens, and they still move the ball up and down the field. Pittsburgh's different. If they can't be balanced, if they can't run the football, because running the football, here's what happens when you run the football. Your quarterback can't be disrupted by great pass rush, by TJ Watt, who is elite in this game. They have faced some elite defensive linemen this year, right? Miles Garrett, Dexter Lawrence twice, and now TJ Watt, who may be, out of the three, the number one game-wrecking player. And if you are one-dimensional, if you have to throw the football, even as well as they've thrown the football, with Jaden in the pocket or outside of it, Pittsburgh has you where they want you. Will it be enough against Washington's offense, which is so great? I don't know, but I don't want to see it. I want to see them run the football. The Giants ran the football against Pittsburgh. But Pittsburgh is fourth in the league in rush defense, even after the Giants ran the ball against them. They are second in the league in fewest expected yards per rush. They're a dominant run defense, even though the Giants ran the football against them. And part of that was Daniel Jones being a potential dual threat guy. That's what Jaden is. But they're used to it. Again, I mentioned this in the last segment. It's not like they're playing a dual threat quarterback for the first time. They play Baltimore twice a year. They have to deal with Lamar Jackson twice a year. And those guys have all been around for it. Watt, Hayward, Highsmith, you know, in the back end, Fitzpatrick, Porter Jr., etc. They know what it takes. You cannot be a one-dimensional football team offensively against Pittsburgh, or you're asking for trouble. If they're one-dimensional on Sunday and if they're unable to run the football and they continue to move the football at the clip that they've done it, meaning not punting, moving the football, rolling up yards, rolling up points, it will be so much more impressive than it was against Baltimore. That's number one. Number two, flipping it around, you really want to make Pittsburgh one-dimensional. Russell Wilson's looked great. But Russell Wilson's looked great because they've been incredibly balanced. They've run the football. The pressure hasn't been on him. I agree with what my guest Jerry Dulac said, which is they're not just going to line it up and run it at one of the worst run defenses in the league. It's not the way they're operating right now. They're letting Russell Wilson throw the ball down the field. And so there's going to be some of that as well. But the best chance you have defensively is to somehow make Pittsburgh one-dimensional and put it all on Russell Wilson. I don't see that happening, personally, which leads me to number three. Red zone defense. Pittsburgh is 30th in the league in red zone offense. I am expecting Pittsburgh to move the football Sunday. I am. I don't have any confidence in the defense against a team that can run the ball like Pittsburgh and a team that can actually now throw the football like Pittsburgh. I think Washington, once again, will get run on. They'll get moved on. So it comes down to red zone efficiency for the Steelers. And they've not been good. They've kicked a lot of field goals. So has Washington. You know, both of these teams in red zone offense, Pittsburgh's 30th in the league in red zone offense. Washington's 26th in the league in red zone offense. And so, Pittsburgh's been a little bit better with Russell Wilson, but they've still kicked a bunch of field goals. So you got to stop them once they get inside the 20, because I don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to slow Pittsburgh down between the 20s. You know, getting a 1-for-4 red zone day out of your defense is probably a winning number. You know, even a 2-for-5 is probably a winning number on Sunday. Red zone defense, crucial. For Washington against a Pittsburgh red zone offense that has struggled. You got to continue to make them struggle. Next up on the list of Washington wins, if I think this is going to be a broken record every week, as will my next one, but you just need a couple of plays defensively. You know, you didn't get many last week. You didn't get many in the games in which you've been run on in particular. You just need a couple of plays. You need a fourth down stop. You need a drop pass. You need an interception of Russell Wilson. He will throw a floater or two. We've watched him play forever. He will put the ball up for grabs every once in a while. But you know what? Pittsburgh, like Washington, hasn't turned the ball over. In terms of the turnover numbers, Pittsburgh right now in turnover numbers is turnover margin. They're third in the league at plus 10. Washington is seventh in the league at plus 5. But where they're really gaining, Pittsburgh's turned people over more. Pittsburgh's got 15 takeaways, where Washington has just 8. But neither team turns the ball over. Washington, you know, has set the record for the first 9 games of a year turning the ball over for the fewest amount of times. 3 since 1933, which was the year they started to track the number. Pittsburgh, though, only has 5 giveaways. So this is going to be a game in which maybe the team that makes one mistake, has one turnover, it ends up being the difference in the football game. You know, last night in watching Cincinnati and Baltimore, we didn't talk about this, Denton, but Cincinnati was up 14-7 with the ball and moving, and Chase Brown had the ball stripped from him. It totally turned the game. That was the turnover margin. It was one turnover. That plus one for Baltimore ended up being the difference in the game. Minus one for Cincinnati ended up being the difference in the game. And I feel like Sunday could come down to that. The team that makes the mistake loses. Neither one of these teams has made many mistakes. That's why they have a combined 13 wins and 4 losses. Lastly, I do think that this is a game in which you have to tackle well. And that'll feed into red zone. That'll feed into this idea, which I don't think they can pull off, which is make Pittsburgh one-dimensional. But Pittsburgh is a team that with their players, whether it's Najee Harris or Jalen Warren, by the way, Cordarrelle Patterson is back. You got to watch him on kickoff returns. Remember, Washington has been kicking the ball in play, and they've been an outstanding kick coverage team. I mean, Blore, Reeves, De'Ami Brown. I mean, they've been doing a great job on kick coverage, but Cordarrelle Patterson's one of the greatest kickoff returners in the history of the game. And he's back this week and will probably be on kickoff returns where Washington seems to invite kickoff returns, and it's worked for them so far. But you've got to tackle well against Pittsburgh. All of their runners, Harris, Warren, and then Pickens, and even a guy like Calvin Austin, their tight end Pat Freiermuth. These guys are just kings of yards after contact. And this Washington has tackled well, but this is going to be the difference between getting off the field a couple of times in the game and getting a couple of key red zone stops, which ultimately I think makes a difference. This is the broken record is just give me a couple of plays defensively because my offense is good enough. My offense is good enough against anybody to score 27 plus. Just get me the ball a couple more times and stop them, you know, with a turnover or, you know, an actual 4-down punt situation. I like Washington's chances Sunday. I think as good as Pittsburgh is defensively, I think like every other team, they're going to be scratching their heads going, my God, they are good on offense. That kid is ridiculous. We couldn't stop him. And by the way, they were running the football with the quarterback. They were running the football with their running backs. We didn't know which way it was coming next. I think Washington can do that again offensively. The key in these games against teams that are capable on the offensive side of the ball is just to make a couple of plays, just get a couple of stops, buy a couple of possessions. Because they did it, you know, a few times and they were still able to win, but they didn't do it against, obviously, Tampa or Baltimore, and they lost. I mean, the Baltimore game, they did get the interception early. Understood. But you're going to need more than that. I like their chances. I really do. Denton, you want to add to that?
I think you summed up a lot of it perfectly. I want to stress one of the points that you made is just to not become one-dimensional. I think this offense flows so incredibly well when there is the threat of the run game, whether that being because of Jaden Daniels. I mean, I think optimistically Brian Robinson's going to go. I don't know. Maybe Ben will give us some more information on that, but especially if B-Rob is in there, attack that. I feel like if the Giants had success against Pittsburgh running the football, that Washington can have success against Pittsburgh running the football. So as long as they stay two-dimensional on offense, I don't know that there's anyone that can really run with them in that case. Like, Pittsburgh's offense is better than it's been in recent years, but it is nowhere near as good as Washington's offense this year.
Yeah. I think, you know, you go back to that Baltimore game, and it was very instructive in that they were completely one-dimensional offensively, and you saw still how productive they could be. They are still capable as a one-dimensional offensive team, but I think this is the team left on their schedule that you least want to be one-dimensional against, because when you start turning T.J. Watt loose, or, you know, you account for him with a chip, with a double team, you still have Hayward, you still have Highsmith, you still have their linebacker, Herbig. This team is going to come after him, and he may break contain and kill them, you know, because that's the thing. If you watch the Giant game last week, you know, everybody was raving about the pass protection. And by the way, it's been excellent all year. I'm not knocking it. But more and more teams now are very leery of trying to just keep him in the pocket with more contain rush. It's much easier to block contain rush than it is bull rush. We're coming after the quarterback. And so I don't think you get that from Pittsburgh, but keep an eye on that. You know, his mobility, his escapability. And I mentioned on Monday's show, I said, I've watched a lot of football like a lot of you have over a long period of time. I can already safely say he's one of the greatest scramblers of all time. He is one of the great runners on pass plays of all time. I mean, Vic, Randall Cunningham, Steve Young, Lamar Jackson, Fran Tarkington, Roger Staubach, you know, the list, there are a lot of them. He already, in 9 games, has proven to me, with my own eyes, I'm watching one of the greatest off-schedule scramblers I've ever seen before. And so playing contain rush is going to be the plan a lot of the time. And the idea is going to be keep him in the pocket. He can still kill us from the pocket, but once he gets outside the pocket, it's even more dangerous. It's going to be interesting to see if that's the way Pittsburgh plays it. You know, is T.J. Watt going to contain rush? It's kind of hard to think of him that way, but they've done some of that against Lamar in the past. But Lamar doesn't have the same pocket presence, all due respect, that Jaden does. I don't think he does. How many times do you see Lamar back up? Lamar last night backed up on one play 20 yards, and he also turned it into like an 18-yard run. But it'll be so interesting to see how the Steelers, if they are able to stop the run, how they play the pass. You want them to not know what's coming next. If they know what's coming next, it's a problem, even though if Washington overcame being one-dimensional like they did against Baltimore, it wouldn't shock me. I just think the challenge is greater against Pittsburgh. Should be a hell of a game Sunday. Real good game. Pittsburgh fans are going to be there. There's no doubt about it. You're probably going to need a silent count at home. But our fans are going to turn out too. And I did see all of you have sent me that burgundy towel. Love it. Absolutely love it. I mean, I'm not big into these things, but that one I love, especially because it doesn't necessarily say the C word on it. All right. Let's do a quick college football preview with Denton. We'll do that, and then Ben's going to jump on with us at 11:35. We'll get an update on Lattimore, an update on Brian Robinson Jr. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Pick up your book bags. Grab your notebooks. It's time to go on campus with Denton.
Hey, give me my theme music.
First of all, do you think it was the kiss of death that Florida says they're sticking with Billy Napier?
No, I think Billy Napier has done a really good job this year.
I do too. I'm glad you said that. Like, because they're not the win. They blew out Kentucky. They were right there at Tennessee. They lost that game in overtime. I think he's done a pretty good job.
Yeah, if their
Florida
quarterback's
fans
healthy,
don't think so, do they?
I think they've been pleasantly surprised. I mean, their win total was like 3.5. Knowing this juggernaut of a schedule, they were right in it with Georgia too for the first three quarters. The fourth quarter was a different story. They were on their third quarterback though as well. So I think he's done a good job, and they know next year they're not going to have that crazy schedule that they have now.
The schedule he's talking about, they opened with Miami undefeated. They had Texas A&M early. They were, you know, until last weekend, they were very much in the SEC race. Even a non-conference game against UCF was tough. They've played Tennessee, Georgia. They play Texas this weekend. They still have LSU, Ole Miss, and then, oh, by the way, a rivalry game, even though Florida State stinks, in Tallahassee. That is honestly one of the most brutal schedules I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's awful. I mean, they are the ones. You knew someone was going to get the wrong end, the short end of the stick with the new scheduling because the SEC adds Oklahoma and Texas. It was Florida. They got absolutely shafted by it.
All right. Where do you want to start?
So we got a lot of big games. I think we should probably start with a nightcap or the main event. You got Bama going on the road to LSU. College game day is going to be there. I know your guy Stanford Steve is going to be thrilled because there's no better place to be on a weekend like this than in Death Valley when Bama comes to town. And this is effectively a playoff elimination game for at least one of the two teams. I don't think any SEC team with three losses is getting into the playoffs. So this is a must win for both. I think they're still very much alive if one of them beats the other and they only have two losses. They still got to run the table the rest of the way, but I think their chances are alive. Jalen Milroe has not looked exceptionally good this year. Garrett Nussmeier at times to me has been the best quarterback in the SEC, but he does have a tendency to turn the ball over a little bit. Alabama is a short favorite, but they're on the road. They're 2.5 now. I think at one point it was 3. This should be a fun one. It should be the game of the night.
And let's just say that looking at what they have coming up, both teams, this is their last losable game. I mean, the Iron Bowl is always the Iron Bowl. I understand that. And look, Bam has struggled on defense at times, even though they, you know, shut out Missouri in their last game. I'll just tell you, I've said this every year. LSU hosts Bama in Death Valley. It is the single best atmosphere of a sporting event I have ever been to. It wasn't even a huge Bama LSU game. It wasn't a 1-2 game, but that place on Saturday night against that opponent, that's going to be incredible. And I think for LSU, I don't like this game either way from a betting standpoint, but I actually kind of like, I would pick LSU if you force me to pick a side because of that home field advantage. Plus, Denton, the defense they faced in A&M, it's almost going to feel like a completely different defense, the defense they face against Bama. I think they're going to move the football. This should be a high-scoring game. What do you think?
Yeah, the total here is 58.5, which is massive for a game of this caliber. I think I would lean just slightly towards Bama. I'm not going to play this one either, though, because it is very tight, and it feels silly to bet against LSU at home. Some of that voodoo stuff going on there. I mean, they got that win against Ole Miss early in the season. Like, there's something with this season for them. I just can't find enough trust in Jalen Milroe to actually lay the bet with Alabama. I do think he plays well in bigger games, but he's never played in this kind of environment. And he was the Iron Bowl was in Jordan-Hare last year, I believe. So that, like, I mean, that is where the craziness happens in the Iron Bowl. If you just look historically over the last like 20 years, all of the crazy wins and losses have been at Jordan-Hare. Most of the games in Tuscaloosa are blowouts. That is a crazy environment, but it's a different beast when it's LSU at night. So I think I would lean Alabama, but I don't have a great feel for this one.
Little bit of revenge for LSU, too, because Dallas Turner knocked Jaden Daniels out of that game last year in Tuscaloosa, and it was a cheap shot. It was a big-time cheap shot, and that was, you know, him getting concussed in that game, and he was in the midst of putting on a show like he had put on that he would put on the next week against Florida. That was as good a 2.5 quarters of a college football game and an incredible performance by Jaden in that game. That was the night that I said, Yeah, just hand it to him. He is the Heisman winner, even though he got knocked out of that game. But they were not happy about that hit and about him staying in the game, Dallas Turner. So a little bit of revenge there. That'll be fun. I mean, the problem is, you know, you have – I mean, I got to watch my Terps against the number one team in the country. I don't care that they're 24-point underdogs. This is the opportunity for Loxley to shut everybody up. Can you imagine if Maryland went to Oregon and won? I can't imagine that. I can't imagine them moving the football and scoring some points, though.
I can imagine scoring some points, maybe covering. I cannot imagine them winning the football game. No. I just can't. All right, one final one real quickly here. There's a ton on the slate this weekend, but you had mentioned this during the break, so we got to touch on it. Georgia on the road against Ole Miss. Georgia's a 2.5-point favorite. Right now, they're third in the country. Many people thought they'd be ranked above Ohio State. They were not, but they did get to, obviously, the bye because they're in the SEC. They're 7-1. Ole Miss is 7-2. A lot can be forgiven for Ole Miss's early season struggles, particularly that loss against Kentucky, if they beat Georgia, which also throws the SEC into a bit of chaos. Who you like? Short favorite, Georgia, 2.5 points.
I love Ole Miss in this spot, and I think Georgia's such a big-time team, especially when they go on the road. I mean, we saw that in Austin a few weeks ago. They are a tough bunch. But Georgia ran it up a little bit last year, you know, when they played Ole Miss. They were dominating the game, and they kept the foot on the pedal. They ended up, I think the final score was something like 59-17, and they scored like 17 or 21, you know, in the final like 7 minutes of the game. I think there's a bit of a memory on that. And Ole Miss, look, I trust Kirby Smart more than almost anybody in college football right now. And I don't trust Lane Kiffin, but this line is super short for a reason. Ole Miss afternoon, the Grove during the morning and early afternoon will be insane. I think Ole Miss wins this game outright, and that puts them right back into the playoff conversation.
Yeah, there's some atmospheres that are like LSU way better at night. I would argue that Penn State way better at night. Ole Miss is perfect at 3:30.
No doubt.
Because your fan base is so lubricated. And they go hard, obviously, in the SEC and most schools, but their fan base is so lubricated. 3:30 is like that perfect spot for Ole Miss, for that environment to be at its best.
You know, the game last week was the first sort of bounce-back game offensively for them because they actually had struggled a little bit against a good Oklahoma defense. I mean, Oklahoma's terrible, but their defense is good. And didn't even roll up a lot against South Carolina, but South Carolina's good defensively. Last week, what they did on the road at Arkansas, 694 yards of total offense, 63 points. By the way, 56 of those coming in the first essentially 2.5 quarters of the game. That was impressive against, by the way, you know this, Denton, an Arkansas team that had played teams tough. You know, they beat Tennessee at home. They had a really good game against A&M that they nearly won at home. That result gives me some, you know, I think gives me some confidence that Ole Miss has found their stride offensively again. I mean, 694 yards in an SEC game. Are you kidding me? Like, that's insane. And by the way, they were penalized. There were so many flags in this game. I kept flipping it over, and constantly they were walking off yardage. I think each team had double-digit penalties. But, I like Ole Miss to beat Georgia tomorrow afternoon. Looking forward to that game. What else? Anything else?
There are a couple other games. We got Ben Standing coming up here. We got to get to
find out. Miami, Marshawn, by the way, danger spot in Atlanta tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon early. Georgia Tech's been pretty good this year, and I just think they got a shot to hurt Miami tomorrow. More on that coming up in the smell test. But Ben Standing is next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. Ben Standing with us every Friday. He's joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Ben, of course, can be followed on X on Twitter at Ben Standing. He's got a podcast, Last Man Standing, that's excellent, and he writes for The Athletic, which you should subscribe to. I do, and I read Ben every time he writes. He did his kind of overall midseason predictions. We'll get to some of those in a moment. But we've talked about the trade already. We had you on the day after the Lattimore trade. What are you hearing with respect to when he'll be able to play?
Yeah, well, we'll find out officially probably later today when Dan Quinn talks, or at least get a better sense. I mean, the fact that he missed last week with the Saints with a hamstring injury, the fact that Washington's game next week is on a Thursday, so there's not much recovery time for anybody in between Steelers game and the Eagles. I mean, and it doesn't seem like he's out there today. I'm making my way to Ashburn. I'm not. So if he's not there today, I mean, I would imagine next week is the target. And, you know, frankly, you know, we're getting to this interesting point of, yeah, all these games matter, but the conference games matter a bit more. And the division games, you know, maybe a bit more than that. So the game next week is more realistically more important than this one. So getting him ready for that. And then, again, he's only just got here, doesn't know the plays, you know, couldn't conceivably know them as well as he would in another few days. So I'm going to guess he doesn't play, but, you know, we'll find out later today, most likely.
What are you guessing on how he'll play, how he will be played when he is ready to play?
Well, I mean, I think if you're going to make this kind of a move, you know, you're looking at somebody who can take on the better receivers, you know, one-on-one, you know. So whether that's coming up, you know, they got two games against A.J. Brown, two games against CeeDee Lamb, things like that. You know, he's the one who I imagine will be, you know, tasked with dealing with them. Now, we don't know quite yet if he's going to be, excuse me, follow those guys around, or he's going to be more of a one side of the field. But Dan Quinn seemed to suggest that while the Saints were using Lattimore kind of on one side of the field, that he would be more versatile here. So I think, you know, I think that's the real. I think that's how I'm looking at him. I think the question is, what happens with everything else, right? Because okay, so
yeah, that's really what I wanted to get your thoughts on.
Yeah, right. I mean, so if we assume that St. Juice is one outside corner and Sanders still is more of that slot guy, you know, I think the question is, you know, ironically, what does this mean for the run defense? Is my biggest wonder, because that's where they've had the biggest issues. Does this allow them to have another player maybe pinch up towards the line? Can you use Jeremy Chinn or Percy Butler, you know, more towards the line than you've had to, because you've had to cover up some holes on the back end? You know, now you can have St. Juice with some, you know, one of the safeties over the top, and knowing you only have to deal with one guy on the other side. So I think that is where I'm really fascinated to see where this goes. Plus, just in general, right? I mean, you just went from, you know, Sanders still, the better version of Sanders still is probably going to be the one that's playing in the slot. The better version of St. Juice is probably going to be the one not having to take on the top receivers in the league, you know, most weeks. So just by definition, like, they should be better at not just one spot, but three spots once they sort of sort it all through. So I think that, to me, is what's going to be most interesting, is how does this mean for Sanders still, for St. Juice individually, and then what does this do for the run defense? Because you got to figure out a way to slow teams down, and that way they haven't done that all year, and maybe this, to some degree, does help that.
What about Brian Robinson Jr. Sunday? Yes or no?
I mean, I don't know. They didn't know until 90 minutes before the last game. He's been limited all week.
So is that what you're expecting again?
I mean, it seems like we're heading in that direction. I'd be surprised if Dan Quinn comes out today and says, yeah, he's good to go. Look, clearly, you know, they all want to play, but when Brian Robinson says he wants to play, I really believe it. You know, he's got that mentality. You know, you got to have a crazy mentality to some degree to run the way he does. So surely he wants to be out there. But yeah, you know, he said earlier this week, look, I'm preparing to play, but if it's not feeling good, you know, I'm not going to force it. So I think it's just another game time decision, again, depending on what Dan Quinn has to tell us today. But you haven't put in a full practice the whole week after not doing it last week. I can't sit here and say you're definitely playing.
What else injury-wise? I mean, I saw Austin Seibert's name pop up on the injury report yesterday. So anything else to be concerned with?
I mean, as far as we know, they haven't brought in any other kicker, so I'm assuming that's not that big of a deal. Cleveland Farrell as a DNP yesterday. We've seen this kind of all year. He's kind of been on and off the injury report. Sometimes he's played, sometimes he doesn't, so we'll just have to watch that. I'm assuming Cornelius Lucas is out, but again, we'll see what they tell us. But at least Brandon Coleman, you know, did some good work last week. So other than from a depth perspective, that's not a huge deal. But look, I mean, you know, this is how it goes, right? Injuries. The more games you play, the more the injuries crop up. And you know, you can even tell like their schedule. Thursday is the day they seem to go more full bore, but Wednesday is turned into a lighter practice, and Friday is, you know, they're, from our perspective as the reporters, like they're barely out there for like an hour on a Friday. So they're starting to take into account that these guys are getting beat up, and you got to obviously work on the plan and the game and all that. But physically they're you know, starting to taper off because, you know, it's that time of year when you start, you know, the aches and pains are starting to accumulate.
All right, we're talking to Ben Standing. We'll go to, you know, some of your midseason predictions here in a moment, but your thoughts on the matchup Sunday? How do they beat Pittsburgh, and what's your prediction?
Yeah, you know, I think, right, we've all been kind of looking for the bar. Is this the game that's going to really reveal where this team is at, meaning Washington? I don't know that this is the answer, but I think if they were to win this game, I think it's pretty clear, right? It would be their biggest win of the year, or their their most impressive win over an opponent that, you know, is pretty good. Only the Ravens, we probably would say, you know, match what we've seen from the Steelers so far. You know, the thing that's been one of the most impressive things about Washington to me this year, you know, beyond the obvious Jaden Daniels, is that they just have played with consistent energy and effort kind of all year. That, you know, even the Ravens game they lost, it's not like, I mean, the Ravens are just good. They didn't come out and, you know, stink up the joint. Not turning the ball over often is helpful for there, but they're bringing a lot of effort. So if the other team doesn't or screws up, Washington has been right there to pounce. This is where I feel like the Steelers have been, you know, one of the top programs to emulate over the years, is because it seems like that's what their MO is. They always seem to show up, right? You know, you may beat them, maybe they're not as talented, or they've had quarterback issues or whatever, but they're going to show up. And that's what I think is interesting about this game, is that, you know, Washington should meet its, they're somewhat a doppelganger in this regard. And this is also, I think, a program that it makes sense to try to emulate because of how they are consistently solid. You know, maybe they don't contend every year, but what, Mike Tomlin has never had a record on? That says something. So I just think this is going to be a game where their energy level, they're going to have to not only match Pittsburgh, but this is where now you have to show what else do you have. I think the run defense is going to be potentially an issue, but Pittsburgh's run game isn't like super talented. Pittsburgh can be run on a little bit. And look, if Lattimore doesn't play, then Russell Wilson's ability to throw the ball deep, he's as good as, you know, when he's right, healthy, as good as anybody. And they've got George Pickens, you know, they just added Mike Williams. I think that could be a huge test for this defense if Lattimore is not out there.
I just think it's funny that you basically said that, you know, these two teams are doppelgangers for each other. They're twins.
Only in terms of energy this year. Yeah, no, for sure.
I agree. I think one of the most impressive, like if they weren't 7-2, but let's just say 5-4, let's just say they lost the Chicago game and they lost one of the two Giant games, there still would have been a recognition, I think, by most people paying attention, that this team plays with real energy, enthusiasm. There's definitely, and that's what Quinn promised during the offseason. He didn't promise 7-2. You know, he promised kind of recalibration, but he said, the one thing you're going to be able to say watching us is that we play fast, we play physical, we play hard, we play with, you know, big time energy, enthusiasm, you know, high motor, all of that stuff. And, you know, as bad as they've been on defense against the run, I don't think it's been because they haven't been playing hard or they haven't tackled well. It's a lot of other things that are involved. So we'll see what happens Sunday. So what are you predicting?
Well, Let me broaden this out. So you mentioned my story with the second half predictions. You know, I felt obligated to have to say, okay, what's their record going to be? And I didn't lay out necessarily game by game what I thought, but in looking at it, I'm like, all right, well, you know, they can beat the Titans, they can beat the Saints, you know, split with the Eagles seems a reasonable view. Dallas, I mean, they might be able to take both, especially with the Week 18 game. It may not mean anything for either team, but Dallas may be playing out the string and, you know, no Dak Prescott for a little bit, all these things. But then I'm like, okay, well, I can't say they're going to win every game, right? I'm not saying they're going to go 8-0, and that leads to then what's left. Then the two games left are Atlanta and Pittsburgh. Look, I am not questioning Washington at this point. It's just, you know, Pittsburgh is a team that's been in sort of been there, done that. This is not new for them. This is new for Washington. So, and please don't yell at me, people, I'm going like 17-16 Pittsburgh. It's not questioning where Washington's at, but I don't assume that Lattimore will play this week. And, you know, T.J. Watt is an absolute, you know, record. Washington's offensive line has done very well. Last week they played arguably the current reigning or leader for the defensive player of the year, right, in Dexter Lawrence. And for the second time this year, he individually did not do much on this team. They held Myles Garrett to zero stats a few weeks ago. So definitely not saying that T.J. Watt's going to dominate. But, you know, the energy level is going to match here, I think, with these two teams. And then it comes down to execution and talent. And, you know, I just wonder if Washington, some of their holes, particularly on defense, get exposed just enough by Pittsburgh. Also, look, Washington, you know, their biggest weakness, I would say, with offense right now is the red zone. I mean, Austin Seibert has been very busy. He's been very good for my fantasy team, but that's because he keeps kicking 3 and 4 field goals a game. So, you know, they've got to get stronger in the red zone, and this may be not the week for that to happen.
Yeah, the good news is Pittsburgh is even worse. They're 30th in red zone offense, Washington 26th. So Chris Boswell and Austin Seibert might be busy on Sunday. We'll see. All right. You had some midseason predictions. I want people to read your story at The Athletic. You know, you gave a lot of reasons for why you think Terry McLaurin will be in the Pro Bowl. Of the others, before we get to your final record prediction and whether or not they'll win the NFC East, what of your predictions did you feel the most confident in?
Kevin, you've met me before. I don't feel confident in any of these predictions.
Come on. You're right about a lot of things. Start, you know, I'm not telling you to get chesty, but you should have more self-confidence.
Tell that to my therapist. All right. No, I don't even have one anymore. I've graduated. All right. I guess what I would say is, like, you know, I think we've discussed some of these to agree. Just to go to the McLaurin thing, because that's the one I found the most interesting, and it was the one I led with. You know, he's obviously only made one Pro Bowl since he's been here, and there's a difference between being a Pro Bowl caliber player and getting selected for the Pro Bowl. And obviously, winning the team's success counts for a lot. And JD sure. Daniels is the talk of the league. Every time he throws one of these crazy passes, McLaurin is often on the back end. And right now, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but where Terry is at right now at receptions, yards, and touchdowns going into this week, the only player in the NFL who matched across all three was Ja'Marr Chase. And that was before he went nuts last night. So when you look at the stats and teams recognize that he is, that the Commanders' offense is where it is, I think this is the year Terry gets back in. There's a lot of other excellent options: Justin Jefferson, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Malik Nabers. You know, there's lots of guys.
Yep.
But I just think that Terry, this is a year where his, like, part of it, I think, also Terry's issue from a public perspective is, even though he's very fast and athletic, he's not a world beater relative to the other crazy athletes at that spot. But this year, the recognition he's getting with Jade and everything else and the numbers, I think, puts him over the top. So it's a crowded field, but, you know, at this pace, he needs one more touchdown to match his season high for any, you know, back as a rookie.
Right.
So he might get 10 this year, and that's, you know, I just think it's a crowded position, but I think this is the year he breaks through.
I like that one. So one, there was one other one that you had that I'm going to share with everybody. That you had seven or eight of them, but I want you to talk about this because I have a follow up question. One of your predictions is that Emmanuel Forbes will be inactive for the remaining games. And so obviously that, you know, assumes health with the corners that they have. But so it's not that out there of a prediction based on just recent, you know, snap counts and not playing at all last weekend. But what makes you think that they are that down on him now? And I'm curious as to whether or not you think he was offered up as part of the deal for Lattimore and maybe New Orleans didn't want him.
Well, I know he was made available for the at the trade deadline. I heard this from two or three different teams, maybe four teams. But, you know, you're taking on, if you're trading for him, you're taking on the last 2 years of this year plus the last 2 years of his rookie contract. So it's not a ton of money, but now all of a sudden it's decent enough money for a guy that is, at best, you could say, a project right now. Here, I just think that prior to the Lattimore trade, they basically only have the five cornerbacks, right, on the team, including Michael Davis. So, you know, you're probably going to have them all up to a degree, but he doesn't play special teams. So now he's really out of the rotation. Now you need, like, two injuries for him to get out there. And Michael Davis does play special teams. So between the two of them, Davis is the only one that's going to be actually playing, so that's why Forbes, I'm saying, would be inactive. And I don't necessarily know that it means that they've fallen out of more favor with him than they have for some time. He was a healthy scratch back in week six. They explained it as a game plan situation, but you know, let's be realistic. If they thought he could help, he'd be on the field. So, yeah, I mean, I just think, and I think it's ultimately they're just going to have to wait till the offseason, see where they can get out of him. I'm sure they still hope they can find some growth and improvement, but right now, just as the Lattimore trade shows, there's more focus now on what's happening today. And today, Forbes is simply not a factor in any way.
All right. Last one. Their record, which you predicted, and whether or not they win the NFC East.
Yeah. So, like I said before with the record, I mean, you know, if we play this game, you know, Titans and Saints are no good. You know, it's realistic to think they, you know, the Eagles, you know, just split there. You know, typically Dallas, you would say probably a split, but Dallas has their own issues with the Dak injury. I'm going to say they lose both. So, you know, all that gets you to five wins of the last eight, losing to Philly. And, you know, like I said, I'm not saying that they're going to, like, flat out lose to Pittsburgh or Atlanta, but, like, you know, I don't see them winning all eight. So that gets you to 12 wins, which is in and of itself crazy, because they haven't had 11 wins in any year since 1991. Yeah. What is it set? Every team in the league has gotten 11 wins at least twice in that span, and these guys haven't done it once. So, but we're here, right? It's 7-2. It's not like we're saying this back in week one. It's here, and, you know, as long as, you know, injuries aside, and as long as they keep up this energy and effort that they've been displaying, I don't know why they can't get there.
Yeah, I mean, 5-3 over the final eight seems pretty reasonable based on what we've watched over the first nine. They'll be right now, they would be favored based on, you know, how the teams stand right now. They'd be favored in seven of the final eight games. Also something to keep in mind.
And in terms of the division, I mean, look, they could go 5-3 somehow but lose both to Philly, right? And, you know, if either of those teams sweep the series, that's who's going to win the division, you would assume. Yep. The first one is obviously in Philly, and we'll have to see how this goes. So, you know, look, Philly's obviously been playing better. They've won four in a row. You know, they probably have more overt talent than on the roster than Washington, but they've also had much more, you know, drama going on there. If they have a loss, you know, people will start questioning again if Sirianni's going to lose his job, things like that. So they've got a lot more drama, but they're a talented team. And, yeah, ultimately I think who sweeps or how that breaks down will determine who's going to win the division. But I'm saying Washington for now, but if Philly sweeps, then obviously that's going to be a lot more complicated.
All right. Great job. Appreciate it. I will talk to you later.
Awesome, man. See you. Have a good weekend.
Ben Standing, everybody. The last time Washington started 8-2, talk about that coming up. We'll go around the NFL. My smell test coming up this hour. Also, Denton and I will make predictions on what happens Sunday. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.